Oh my gosh, it's 2021 and I'm now 17. I feel like it's been so long since I've updated you guys, but I feel like we should just get right into this. So, off the bat, I'm going to say that episodes will now be once every 2 weeks because I am just so busy with school and work, and everything is just keeping me like so busy pretty much from 8 a.m. in the morning until like 11 p.m. and I just really haven't had much time to like plan my podcast or whatever, because this honestly takes a lot of time. It probably takes me like 4 hours to plan everything before each episode. But yeah, I hope this isn't too much of a change, but if it is, I'm really sorry. But I really enjoy this, and I also recently realized that since I'm 17 now, if I were a wizard, I'd literally be going into my last year of Hogwarts. And that just seems so disappointing. Like, I'd want to go to whatever the wizard equivalent of college is. I don't really think they have one. It's kind of just like Hogwarts, then you go right into whatever you're doing with your life. And yeah, that's just like kind of makes me sad, because now I realize I'm only 17 and that's really young in the grand scheme of things, but like, oh my gosh, I feel so old. Also, the college I'm going to is in a palace, so I guess that's the closest I'm gonna get to wizard college. And was no one going to tell me that Tom Felton has music and it's like good? I've only had the chance to actually listen to one of his songs, but it is such a bop. So anyway, stream If You Could Be Anywhere by Tom Felton for a good 2021. And if I have a little bit of a lisp right now, it's because I recently got Invisalign, and you shouldn't notice it that much, but if you do at any point, that's why. So sorry, please don't cyberbully me for it. And finally, I have really missed talking to you guys, and that's really interesting for me to say because it's literally just me in my room having a conversation with myself for like an hour. But you guys seem to enjoy it, so it's okay. Yeah, it's like having a delayed conversation where I get to do all the talking, and I really like talking, so that's okay. So let's get right into this, and in this episode, we're going to be going over chapters 9 and 10 of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. And obviously, we're gonna start with chapter 9, The Midnight Duel. So, right off the bat, Harry H. Drake. Drac, what? He hates Draco Malfoy even more than he hates Dudley. And the first year Gryffindors only have potions with Slytherin, so it's not that bad because he doesn't have to put up with him that much. But then Harry sees that flying lessons start on Thursday, and Gryffindor and Slytherin are learning together. And Harry tells Ron that he doesn't want to make a fool of himself on a broom in front of Malfoy, even though he's been looking forward to learning about flying most. And Ron says that Harry, like, doesn't know that he'll make a fool out of himself, and Malfoy's always talking about how good he is at flying, but it's probably all lies. So, Draco would complain loudly about how first years never got on their house Quidditch teams, and would tell long stories that almost always ended up with him narrowly escaping muggles in helicopters. And Seamus Finnegan also talks about Quidditch a lot, and so does Ron. And the narrator says that it seems like everyone from wizarding families talked about Quidditch constantly, which Harry obviously can't relate to. So at one point, Ron and Dean Thomas is a guy that shares their dorm, they got into an argument because Ron couldn't see anything exciting about football because no one was allowed to fly. And at one point, Harry caught Ron poking Dean's poster of a football team and trying to make the players move, like in the wizarding pictures. And Neville Longbottom has never been on a broomstick before. And that's because his grandmother would never let him near one. And Harry honestly thinks that that's good because Neville manages to be extremely clumsy on the ground, and he doesn't think that it's a good idea if he were to have an accident, like in the air or whatever, because he'll just end up getting hurt. And Hermione Granger is almost as nervous as Neville because she couldn't learn how to fly right out of a book, even though she tried. And she also bores everyone with flying tips that she got from Quidditch through the ages. And Neville would listen to, like, every word because he figures anything might help him later on. And Harry hasn't gotten a single letter in the mail since since Hagrid sent him one, and everyone noticed that he, like, didn't get anything. And Draco has an eagle owl that's always bringing packages of sweets from home, just to really let us know that Draco is currently a spoiled piece of garbage. Oh my gosh, it's, like, unreasonable how much I dislike Draco right here. He just reminds me of so many people that I used to know, and just, like, those type of people suck. Even though I like Draco so much, like, he sucks. Anyway, Neville demonstrates how this, like, remember-all thing works, and he gets it in the mail. So, basically, it turns red, and it, like, tells you if you've forgotten to do something. And Draco takes Neville's remember-all and, like, is just being a jerk about it. So Harry and Ron immediately want to fight. They're just, like, completely ready to throw hands. They want to choose violence so badly. So they jump to their feet. But McGonagall was there too quickly and is able to avoid, like, any, like, serious confrontation. So Malfoy says that he was just looking at Neville's remember-all and... yeah. So anyway, at 3:30 that afternoon, Harry and Ron and all of the Gryffindor first years go into, like, the grounds for their first flying lessons, and the Slytherins are already there, and there are 20 broomsticks lying in neat, like, lines on the ground. So apparently, Fred and George have complained about the school brooms because some of them would start to vibrate if you flew too high, where they would always fly slightly to the left. And Madame Hooch is the teacher, and she has short gray hair and yellow eyes like a hawk. And she tells everyone to stand by a broom, stick their right hand over it, and say up. So Harry's broom practically jumps into his hands, but that is not common among the group. So Hermione's only rolls over, and Neville's broom didn't move at all. So Madame Hooch also showed them how to mount their brooms, and Harry and Ron are so petty because she was delighted. I mean, they were delighted when she corrected Malfoy's, like, grip on his broom and says that it had been wrong for years. And at one point during this, like, lesson, she says that when she blows her wish whistle, they should all kick off the ground and rise a few feet above the air and come down. It sounds easily enough. Except Neville was so nervous that he would be left on the ground while everyone else was flying, so he pushed off before she, like, blew the whistle, and he couldn't control his broom and ended up 20 feet in the air before he slipped off of his broom and landed face down on the grass. And yeah, so, wonderful reason for Neville's grandmother to never let him on a broom. He's just, like, too clumsy for it at this point. I feel like I feel like the best way to deal with a situation like Neville's is to have that person, like, have different experiences when they're young. Like, make this boy acquire some balance. Anyway, yeah, he's very much not cool. And she takes him to the hospital wing and tells the class not to move. But as soon as Madame Hooch leaves with Neville, Malfoy starts to make fun of him and calls him a, quote, great lump. And yeah, I, like, absolutely adore Draco Malfoy, but right now he's 11 and he just, like, sucks. But not just that, a lot of his insults are just really terrible. Like, they're pretty low-hanging fruit, honestly. It doesn't take a, like, genius to come up with what he's coming up with. It's not very witty at all. Anyway, Parvati Patil is one of the Gryffindors and sticks up for Neville and tells Malfoy to shut up. But Pansy Parkinson, who's one of the Slytherin girls, starts to make fun of Parvati. And that's when Malfoy sees Neville's remember-all in the grass. Harry tells Draco to give him Neville's remember-all, but Draco says that he's going to leave it up a tree for Neville to find, which leads to Harry getting on a broom. and realizing that he's able to, like, fly on a broom without ever, like, trying before, really. And Harry also ignores Hermione, who is saying no, and that Madame Hooch told everyone not to move, and that they're going to get them in trouble. But the blood is pounding in Harry's ears, and he tells Malfoy to give him the Remembrall, or he'll knock him off his broom. And he actually follows through with it, because he, like, shoots toward Malfoy, and Malfoy has to dodge him, which leads to Harry making a sharp turn and holding the broom steady. And that, like, is pretty impressive, so a few people on the ground start to clap. And then, like the queen of petty that Harry is, he says that Malfoy doesn't have Crabbe and Goyle available to save his neck on a broom, which causes Malfoy to throw the Remembrall in the air and shoot toward the ground. So Harry has to go into a steep dive to catch the Remembrall, and he does so and has just enough time to, like, pull his broom straight up so that he can tumble gently onto the grass with the Remembrall in his hand. So Harry's okay and whatnot, and before he can even do anything, Professor McGonagall shouts his name. Like, she's shouting. It was in all caps and everything. And she tells him to go with her, and she's just completely furious. And Parvati and Ron are trying to tell her that it wasn't Harry's fault, but she's not even listening and just tells Harry to follow her. And Harry is just so sure that he's going to be expelled and thinks about how devastating it would be if he had to, like, stay on the grounds and, like, be Hagrid's assistant, because he would be able to see Ron and everyone else becoming wizards when he's literally a staff member at the school. So eventually, McGonagall gets to Professor Flitwick's classroom and asks to borrow wood, and Harry thinks that it's a cane she's going to use on him. And, like, I know this is, like, meant to kind of be glossed over in a way, but it's so sad. Like, this poor 11-year-old boy thinks that he's about to be beaten for just breaking a simple rule. And, like, oh my gosh. I feel like no one, like, really realizes how much the Dursleys have traumatized Harry. But anyway, Wood is actually Oliver Wood, who is a burly fifth-year boy. And then she takes them to a different classroom and introduces Harry Potter as Oliver Wood's new seeker. And Oliver is just completely delighted, and Harry is still confused that he's not being expelled. But he's like, okay, this is cool, I can breathe again. And McGonagall starts talking about what Harry did and how she saw him dive for the Remembrall, and it was at least a 50-foot dive, and even Charlie Weasley couldn't have done it. And we learn that Oliver Wood is the captain of the Gryffindor team. And he tells McGonagall that Harry will need a decent broom, like a Nimbus 2000 or a Clean Sweep 7. And McGonagall says that she'll speak to Dumbledore and see if they can, like, bend the rule about first years not having their own brooms, because they need a team better than last year. And apparently, they were absolutely demolished by Slytherin in the last match of, like, last year or whatever. And she couldn't look Snape in the face for weeks. And McGonagall says that she wants to hear that Harry is training hard, or she might change her mind about punishing him. But then she smiles and says that his father would have been proud, because he was also an excellent Quidditch player. And then we do a little time skip to when Harry is telling Ron all of this information, and he just can't believe it, because there hasn't been a first year on a house team in about a century. But Harry tells Ron not to tell anyone, because Wood wants to keep it a secret, so it's kind of like Harry's their secret weapon at this point. And Fred and George come into the Great Hall and come up to Harry and say that they're also on the Gryffindor team as beaters, and they're definitely going to win the Quidditch Cup this year, because their team is going to be great, and they haven't won since Charlie Weasley left Hogwarts. So then Fred and George have to leave, because Lee Jordan said that he found a new secret passageway out of the school, even though Fred and George both think it's a passageway behind the statue of Gregory the Smarmy that they found in their first week at Hogwarts. And then Malfoy comes up to their table and teases Harry about having his last meal. And Harry says that Malfoy is a lot braver on the ground with his little friends with him. And, like, this is kind of what I'm talking about. Harry actually puts thought into his comebacks. And, like, they're kind of snappy. They're kind of witty and cool. I mean, like, as far as 11-year-olds go, it's better than just being like, uh-huh, you're poor. So, yeah. And also, Harry saying little friends kind of reminds me of, like, Black parents and how they refuse to refer to, like, boyfriends or girlfriends or, like, any sort of significant other of their children as anything than little friends until you're, like, an adult. I don't know if that happens with, like, other cultures, but that just made me think of it. So Malfoy challenges Harry to a duel, and a wizard's duel specifically. And Harry has never heard of a wizard's duel, but Ron says that he accepts and that he is Harry's second. Malfoy chooses Crabbe as his second and says that they will meet in the trophy room at midnight because it's always unlocked. So then they walk off, and Harry has to ask Ron what a wizard's duel is, because he's never heard of one, and what a second is. So Ron says that the second is there to take over if you die. And Harry makes a strange face, which causes Ron to say that people only die in real duels with real wizards, and that Harry and Malfoy don't know enough magic to, like, do any real damage, so they'll just, like, be shooting sparks at each other, basically. So, yeah. And he also says that Malfoy probably expected Harry to refuse to duel anyway. So Harry's like, okay, what do I do if I wave my wand and nothing happens? So Ron says to throw his wand away and punch him in the face, which is when Hermione Granger comes up to them and is like, excuse me, and says that she couldn't help overhearing what Harry and Malfoy were saying. And this causes Ron to say, bet you could. And I just wish, like, oh my gosh, I wish all of the comebacks were, like, as good as and snappy as Ron's are, because, like, we kind of gloss over this in the movies, but, like, Ron is a genuinely funny character, and I, like, completely forget this, because I haven't read this book in a while. I haven't read any of the books in a while, to be honest. But, like, yeah, he says, bet you could. And, yeah, he's just so funny when he gets the chance to. And Hermione says that if they're caught out of bed that late at night, they'll definitely lose points for Gryffindor, and it's so selfish of Harry and Ron. And Harry says that it is none of her business, and Ron says, goodbye. And I like to think that he kind of, like, snaps his fingers in, like, a zigzag as he says it, but, like, I know he didn't, but I just think he does. So, later that night, Harry and Ron have to wait for Dean and Seamus to fall asleep, and Neville still isn't back from the hospital wing, so they don't have to worry about him. And Harry's just, like, thinking to himself, pretty reasonably, that he is really pushing his luck by breaking another school rule in one day. But he's just so tired of Malfoy and wants the chance to, like, duel him face to face so he can't, like, bail. And then finally, at 11:30, Ron says that they should go, and they put on their dressing gowns. And I'm just, yeah, like, I never, like, hear people talking about dressing gowns now. And in the movies, I believe they just wear robes. They don't, like, wear actual, like, full dressing gowns. But anyway, they go downstairs to the common room, and when they get there, a lamp turns on, and it's Hermione Granger. And she just starts going on about how selfish they are and how they're going to get Gryffindor in trouble, and they're going to lose the points that she got earlier in the day from class. And Ron is so sassy and says that she needs to go back to bed. And Hermione says that she almost told Percy because he's a prefect and will put a stop to that. And the narrator says that Harry could not believe anyone could be so interfering. And yeah, I feel like it was kind of strange for Hermione to, like, sit up waiting for them. Like, I understand why she did it, but she's just, like, sitting there in the dark. She's like, oh my god, I'm gonna catch him. Anyway, Harry and Ron, like, are going to leave, but Hermione follows them and is described to be, quote, hissing at them like an angry goose, unquote. And all I have to say is that if anyone were to ever describe me as hissing like an angry goose, I would be so offended, not only because, like, being compared to an angry goose is, like, pretty offensive, but I would be mad that it would probably be accurate. Like, I've seen videos of angry geese, and people tell me that geese are so rude or whatever, and they'll mean, and they'll bite you or whatever, but I've literally walked up to multiple wild geese, and I'll just pick them up. I know I shouldn't have, but I was, like, 12 at the time, so I wouldn't recommend, like, just picking up wild geese unless you are an expert geese whisperer like myself at the age of, like, 10 to 14. So Hermione continues, and she's talking about how they don't care about Gryffindor, and they only care about themselves, and she doesn't want Slytherin to win the House Cup. And the boys just keep telling her to go away. So finally, she, like, gives up, and she says that she warned them and that they can remember what she said when they're on the train home tomorrow. And she walks away and is going back to the common room or whatever. Except the only issue is that when Hermione turns to go back through the porthole or whatever, well, not a porthole, it's the painting hole technically, the fat lady is not there in her painting, and she had gone out for some sort of nighttime visit in a different painting, so Hermione is now left alone, and she jogs to, like, catch up with the boys down the corridor and says that she's not going to stay by herself because she doesn't want to get caught by Filch. So, yeah, and then she says that if the three of them are caught together, she can say that she was trying to stop them and they can back her up. And, like, Ron's like, oh my god, what kind of nerve does she have? And I kind of gotta agree with him at this point. Like, you can't catch up to them and then say, yeah, if we get caught, I'm gonna throw you under the bus to keep myself out of trouble, even though I kind of got myself into this trouble too. Like, if you're gonna do that, you could at least just not say anything about it. Anyway, in the middle of Hermione and Ron bickering, Harry tells them to shut up because he heard something, and Ron thinks it's Mrs. Norris, but it's not. It's Neville. He was sleeping on the floor because he forgot the password, so he's been outside for hours, and he wants to go inside when they tell him the password, but they say they can't because the fat lady isn't there, so he says that he's going to come with them because he doesn't want to be by himself. And, yeah, because the Bloody Baron has already been by twice. So they're like, okay, whatever, I guess you can come with us. So Ron is just, like, fed up at this point and says that if either Hermione or Neville gets them in trouble, he's not going to rest until he learns the curse of the bogeys that Quirrell taught them about and uses it on them. So, once again, like, they just start to bicker and continue on, and they're like, I don't want to get caught, and Hermione's just going on, and Neville's being a baby, and they're walking through the corridors until they get to the third floor and are in the trophy room. Malfoy and Crabbe weren't there yet, so they, like, walk along the walls and keep their eyes on the doors that are on each side of the room, because, like, Harry even has his wand out because he doesn't want Malfoy to just burst in and start dueling immediately. So after a while, Malfoy's, like, pretty late. So Ron thinks that maybe he chickened out, but then they hear a noise in the next room. And the voice says, sniff around, my sweet. They might be lurking in a corner. And they realize that it is Filch talking to Mrs. Norris. So the gang begins to creep down this long gallery full of suits of armor, and at one point they can hear Filch getting closer, and Neville starts to run, but he trips and grabs Ron by the waist, which causes the both of them to topple into a suit of armor, and that just, like, causes a ton of noise. So Harry yells at everyone to run, and they start sprinting, and they go through a hidden passageway, and are running until they come out near their charmed classroom, and they know that it's really far from the trophy room. And Harry thinks that they lost Filch. So Hermione starts to go on a little I told you so, like, spiel. But then she reveals that Malfoy tricked them, and that he was probably never planning on meeting them in the trophy room, and instead tipped Filch off and said that someone was going to be in the trophy room so that they would get in trouble. So they're like, oh, this kind of makes sense. And they begin to walk when they hear Pete. And he sees them and kind of starts to make fun of them and is like taunting them. And they ask him not to make a ton of noise because he'll get them in trouble. So, of course, he decides to be a jerk and starts yelling that students are out of bed in the charms corridor. And they hear Filch running as fast as he can until Hermione uses Alohomora and unlocks a door to a classroom. And they go through it and shut it and listen through the door. So then Peeves kind of comes in clutch when Filch asks which way they went. And Peeves says that he's not telling nothing until he says please. So Filch gives up and says please. And that causes Peeves to say nothing. And because, like, get it? He was kind of, like, joking with him, saying, I ain't saying nothing till you say please. So he doesn't tell him where, he doesn't tell Filch where the gang is at, and they are okay because the door that everyone went through was locked until Hermione unlocked it, so Filch thinks that it's still locked. And I feel bad for Neville because, like, he hasn't really done anything at this point because, like, he got his arm broken, first of all. Or whatever happened to his arm, I guess it was broken. And then he has to sleep outside because he forgot the password. And now he's just being dragged along on this, like, adventure that may get him kicked out of school. And he's scared because he's, like, a baby at this point in the series. He's just, like, yeah, he's just, like, so scared. And Harry even has to tell him to get off of him because Neville was tugging on the sleeve of Harry's, like, what was it called? Dressing gown. And then he realizes that it's because they aren't just in any room or whatever. They're actually in the forbidden corridor on the third floor. And they know why it's forbidden now. And that is because there is a huge dog that has three heads and takes up the entire space between the ceiling and the floor in the corridor. So immediately they all run out. And when they get out, they're expecting Filch will catch them. But apparently he ran in the other direction or whatever, so they don't have to worry about him. And they do not stop running until they get back to the fat lady on the seventh floor. And she's kind of mad, and she asks them where they've been because their clothes are, like, ruffled and they're all sweaty. But they give her the password and basically collapse into armchairs in the common room and just sit in silence as they're all stunned about everything. And they're just, like, processing everything. And then they start to wonder why the dog is there. And that's when Hermione says that it was standing on a trap door, so it's obviously guarding something. And Hermione says her iconic line of, quote, I hope you're pleased with yourselves. We could have been killed. Or worse, expelled. Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed. Unquote. And Ron says, no, they don't mind. And that it's as if they dragged her along. But Harry is still thinking about the trapdoor, and he thinks that that grubby little package from Vault 713 is being guarded at Hogwarts, because Hagrid said that Gringotts was the safest place in the world for something if you want to hide it, except for Hogwarts. And that is the end of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. And we're going to have a quick word from our sponsors, and I will be right back. Welcome back, guys. Okay, so let's get started on Chapter 10, Halloween. Okay, so this chapter opens on the next day, and Malfoy is just completely stunned when he sees that Harry and Ron are still at school and looking perfectly happy. And by now, Harry and Ron thought that seeing the three-headed dog was a great adventure, and they really wanted to have another one. And I can really relate to this, because there have been times when, like, my friends and I have almost gotten into trouble, and we're so worried at the time, but then you look back on it, and it's kind of funny, and you just have good memories of it. Anyway, Harry tells Ron about the package that was taken out of Gringotts and why he thinks that it's at Hogwarts. So they come to the conclusion that it's either really valuable or really dangerous, but it could possibly be both. But neither Neville or Hermione are interested in any way of what's going on with the dog or the trapdoor. Neville never wants to go near the dog again, and Hermione is not speaking to Harry or Ron. Harry and Ron kind of see Hermione not speaking to them as an added bonus because at this point she's kind of bossy and annoying and whatnot. And at this point, they just really want revenge on Malfoy for tricking them. So mail comes into the Great Hall and all the owls come in and everything and whatnot. Yeah, it's not very interesting at this point. We're kind of used to it. Except Harry gets a big package and there's a letter with it. So he opens the letter first and it's from McGonagall and says that he shouldn't open the package at the table because it is a Nimbus 2000 and everyone doesn't need to know that he has a broom or everyone will want one. And it also says that Oliver Wood is going to meet him at the Quidditch pitch at 7 o'clock that night for his first training session. And Harry can barely hide that he's so happy and excited and everything, and lets Ron read the note. And Ron is excited too, so they leave the Great Hall and go upstairs to unwrap the broom before they have to go to their first lesson. But before they can even go upstairs, the stairs are blocked by Crabbe and Goyle, and Malfoy takes the package from Harry and says that it's a broom and that first years aren't allowed to have them and that he's going to be in so much trouble or whatever. And so Ron takes this moment to just completely flex on Malfoy and starts going on about how it's not just a broom, it's a Nimbus 2000. And Malfoy has like a Comet 360 at home or something. And comets look flashy, but they aren't even in the same league as Nimbus. And it's kind of just like, oh my gosh, this is a broom. It's not that serious. But anyway, Malfoy isn't like that great at comeback still. And he says that Ron wouldn't know anything about it because he can't afford half the handle of Malfoy's broom. And Professor Flitwick comes by and says that he hopes the boys aren't arguing, and Malfoy says that Harry Potter has been sent a broomstick, and Flitwick says, yeah, that's right, Professor McGonagall told him about the special circumstances. So Flitwick asks what model it is, and Harry says that it is a Nimbus 2000, and that it's really thanks to Malfoy that he got it, and he just says that to be smug. So finally, Harry and Ron are able to go upstairs, and they're laughing at Malfoy's anger and confusion about the entire situation. So Hermione hears them talking about how if Malfoy hadn't stolen Neville's Remembrall, he wouldn't even be on the team. And she's like, oh, so do you think this is a reward for breaking rules? So Harry says that he thought she wasn't speaking to them, and Ron tells her not to stop now because it's doing them so much good, and that just makes Hermione leave. So Harry spends the whole day thinking about his broom and how he can't wait for his first lesson. So he goes down to the Quidditch pitch around 7 like he was told, and Oliver Wood isn't there yet. So he gets on his broom and just starts to ride around for a bit until Oliver shows up and tells him to come back down. And Oliver says that he's a natural, just like McGonagall said. And they start to go over the rules of Quidditch. And this kid is, like, this is kind of helpful for me because I, like, know how Quidditch works, but, like, kind of, I don't, like, remember the exact words for positions or balls or whatever. So I'm going to give you guys an overview. There are 7 players on each team. 3 of them are called chasers. There's a bright red ball, and it's like the size of a football. That is the quaffle. And the chasers throw the quaffle to each other and try to get it through the hoops to score 10 points. And Oliver says that he is the keeper for Gryffindor, and that the keeper flies around those hoops and tries to stop the chasers from the other team from scoring in their hoop. There are 2 jet black balls that are a little bit smaller than the quaffle, and those are called the bludgers. So the bludgers zoom through the air and whatnot and try to knock players off their broom, and that's also why there are 2 beaters on each team. And for the Gryffindors, that is the Weasley twins. So the beaters on each team protect their team from the bludgers and try to knock the bludgers toward the other team. Finally, there's a golden snitch, and it is the Seeker's job to catch it, and Harry is the Seeker for Gryffindor. Whichever team catches the snitch ends the game and wins their team an extra 150 points. So that team, like, that catches the snitch usually ends up winning just because of how many points you get. And since the game only ends when snitches, not, well, when the snitch is caught, a game can literally go on for months. And that just makes me wonder, like, how long could a school game go on? Because it's not like this is like a professional Quidditch league or whatever, so they don't have any replacements or anything. So it seems like at a certain point, it would just be a matter of, like, who gets tired the fastest and who isn't falling asleep. Because it's not like they have replacements, so, like, would it be reasonable to expect them to just, like, pick random people from their team at that point to fill in? Like, could he just, like, come up to Dean and just be like, hey, can you fill in me for the Seeker for a bit so I can go nap or whatever? So, yeah, Quidditch doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but, like, a lot of sports don't make a lot of sense to me, so I don't know if it's just me or if it's, like, a Quidditch thing. Anyway, Oliver says that they're not going to practice with the snitch because it's getting too dark and they might lose it. So he gets on his broom and just throws golf balls in the air, and Harry catches them. And there's a bit of a time jump after this when practice finishes. And I think it's the next day when Harry wonders if it's because he's so busy with Quidditch practice 3 evenings a week on top of all of his homework that he hasn't noticed that he's already been at Hogwarts for 2 months. And I kind of, like, feel what Harry means because I work 3 jobs right now, and that takes up about 40 to, like, 50 hours of my week, and I'm also overloading on classes so that I can graduate from high school a year early, and honestly, I cannot believe that it's already February. It, like, I know school shut down last March, but it just doesn't feel like it was almost a year ago. Like, it's so crazy to me. And I think it's just because I'm so busy that I really don't notice much of a change in time because, like, I have such a strict schedule. But anyway, on Halloween morning in Charmed class, Flitwick announces that they're going to start making objects fly, and they begin to learn the Wingardium Leviosa spell. And one thing I noticed was that here in the book, Hermione is correcting someone, and she says that it's Wingardium Leviosa, and that you should make the gar nice and long. Except in the movie, she's like, it's not Wingardium Leviosa, it's Wingardium Leviosa, or whatever it is. But either way, it's like the, no, she's saying that it's Wingardium Leviosa, not Wingardium Leviosa, but it doesn't seem like it makes much of a difference. Like, that's so inconsequential, why would they change it? So, of course, Hermione is the first person to do the spell correctly, and she makes her feather levitate off her desk. And by the end of class, Ron is just in the worst mood and says that there's no wonder why no one can stand Hermione because she's a nightmare. And that is, like, honestly so cruel of him. Like, is she irritating? Yes. But, like, I can kind of relate to Hermione a lot because it's not like she's doing it on purpose. Like, she's all so new to this, and she just, like, wants to follow the rules and fit in as well as possible. And, like, I can understand, like, how that is because she knows literally no one when she first arrives at Hogwarts. And I know they've been there for 2 months, but, like, she's still, like, probably an outcast just because, like, other people went into school knowing someone, and she goes in knowing literally no one. And I can really relate to that because I was homeschooled until I went into, like, a school in the 6th grade, so I didn't know many kids that were my age for most of my life. And when I did go to school, I went to a private Catholic school, and I was the only Black kid, and I was also the only Pentecostal Christian. So, in every way, I stuck out like a sore thumb. I was about as minority gets at that point. And it's really not fun, and you feel so alone. And so, like, when I went there, pretty much everyone had literally started going to this school in kindergarten. And so, like, most people at my school have known each other for most of their lives. So I was kind of just thrown into the mix, and I honestly feel really bad for Hermione because of this. And I have many situations like this where I can deeply relate to it, because, like, apparently Hermione and I have the same Enneagram personality type or whatever, and we also have very similar Myers-Briggs personality types, and I can definitely see why, because she, like, follows rules and can, like, be seen as really, like, irritating at times, even though she doesn't mean to. She's, like, bossy because, like, she thinks she knows best or whatever, and, like, I can relate to that. So, yeah, I'm just gonna go back to what I was talking about. So, Hermione hears what Ron says and knocks into Harry as she hurries past him, and Harry sees that she's crying and says that he thinks she heard Ron. And Ron is kind of being a jerk still and says that he doesn't care and says that she must have noticed that she has no friends. And oh my gosh, I feel so bad for Hermione just because I, like, have personal experience with, like, almost this exact situation where, like, she is absolutely the newest of the new kids, and she, like, it's especially hard at this age because they're 11, and I went into, like, sixth grade when I was 11, and boys at that age are so, like, difficult because they're, like, so honest, and, like, a lot of times they can be really selfish and don't understand, like, the implications of what they're saying, so it can just be really hard for her, and I can completely understand. And oh my gosh, I think in a way that this is also why I want Hermione to be black so badly. Like, I see so much of myself in her, and it would be great if I were able, well, not just me, but, like, if people like myself, black girls, were able to see representation of ourselves at that age that's actually realistic, and it's not just, like, black girl with, like, the sparkly emojis when they're 16, 17, 18, however old, they've gotten older, they have self-confidence, because the truth is, like, you have to, like, go through things, well, as a black girl, a lot of times you go through things in life that cause you to get to that point, and I don't see very many depictions of those stages in life that are realistic, and I think that Hermione's situation right here would be a great example of what I want to see more of, because, like, I feel like if more people were able to see how bad it is, they would be able to empathize with that, and eventually they would teach their kids better so that people don't have to go through this because it sucks so much. Anyway, I think I'm actually finished with this tangent at this moment, but Hermione doesn't show up for her next class, and Harry and Ron don't see her for the rest of the afternoon. And on their way down to the Great Hall for the Halloween feast, Harry and Ron hear Parvati Patil telling Lavender that Hermione was crying in the girls' restroom and wanted to be left alone. And Ron looks really awkward about this, but they go into the Halloween feast and basically forget about Hermione. And there are live bats on the walls and ceilings, and they're flying around tables, and then the feast appears on golden plates like it did at the start of term banquet. And it's mentioned here that Harry has a jacket potato, and I really don't know what that is. Is that the same thing as, like, a, what's it called? Like, a stuffed potato? A loaded baked potato or something? I don't know. Maybe it's, like, an actually, like, different British dish or whatever. Anyway, yeah, Harry is having whatever a jacket potato is when Professor Quirrell comes in to the hall, and his turban is askew, and he looks scared, and he says that the troll, well, he basically is, like, stuttering, kind of, not really, but he can't make out full sentences, and says, "Troll in the dungeons, thought you ought to know," before he faints on the floor. And I really don't know why I thought about this, but when it says that Quirrell's turban was askew, I thought of those pictures of Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr., where someone photoshopped acrylic nails and a bonnet onto them, and it's just so funny to me, because I'm imagining Quirrell running into the Great Hall with, like, a bonnet on, like, a silk bonnet or something, and he has his fake nails, and he says that there's the troll in the dungeons and whatnot before he faints, and that's just way funnier than it should be. I don't expect anyone to laugh at that, but I thought it was really funny for absolutely no reason. So, Dumbledore tells the prefects to take their houses back to their dorms, and Harry realizes that Hermione doesn't know about the trolls, so they have to go get her. So, he and Ron join the Hufflepuffs that are going in the opposite direction than the Gryffindors, and they're able to go down some side corridor where the girls' restroom is. And at one point, they hear footsteps behind them, and Ron thinks it's Percy, but they turn around and see that it's Snape, and he crosses the corridor and disappears from view. And Harry wonders what's going on and why he's not going down to the dungeons with the... Why he's going down... I don't know. But Harry's like, something's fishy. My notes aren't the best at this moment. So they also smell something and they hear grunting and they realize that the sound is coming from this troll, and they hear footsteps, and yeah, it's a troll. And so finally, the troll goes into this doorway, and they see that there is a key in the lock, and they lock it. And Ron says that it's a good idea, so they do, until they realize that that is the girl's restroom, and that Hermione is now locked in there with the troll. So they unlock it again, and they go inside and see that Hermione's crouching down against the wall, and it looks as if she's going to faint. And the troll was walking toward her and, like, knocking sinks off the walls as it went. So Ron yells at the troll and throws a metal pipe at it, but it doesn't even notice. And Harry yells at Hermione to run and tries to pull her toward the door, but she can't move. And she's just, like, pressed flat against the wall because she's so terrified. But the shouting and echoes of everything going on seems to drive the troll crazy. And it starts to go toward Ron, and he has no way to escape. So Harry decides to take a running jump and, like, puts his arms around the troll's necks. And that's when he realized that his wand ends up, like, getting stuck up the troll's nose. And it hurts it, so it, like, starts to thrash around and stuff. And Hermione isn't doing much because she's super scared, obviously, and that's really reasonable. And so Ron uses Wingardium Leviosa to float the troll's club out of its hand until it, like, goes up in the air and falls on its head. And this knocks the troll out, and it falls right on its face. And they're looking around, wondering if it's dead, but Harry doesn't think so. He thinks it just knocked it out. So he goes and takes his wand out of the troll's nose. And they hear a bunch of running footsteps, and they look around and, like, realize how much noise they've been making. And that's when Professor McGonagall comes into the room with Snape and Quirrell. And Harry has never seen McGonagall so angry. And all of his hopes for winning 50 points for Gryffindor go right down the drain. And Professor McGonagall says that they're lucky that they weren't killed, and asks why they weren't in their dormitory like they were supposed to be. So then Hermione kind of really comes through and says that they were looking for her, and that she went looking for the troll because she thought she could deal with it on her own because she had read about them. And Ron is just so shocked that Hermione is lying to a teacher for them that he drops his wand. And Hermione continues and says that if the boys hadn't found her, she would probably be dead because it was going to finish her off when they found her. So Harry and Ron are just standing there trying to look as if they aren't as shocked by the news as the teachers are. And McGonagall says that 5 points will be taken from Gryffindor because of Hermione, and that they're all very lucky because not many first years could have taken on a full-grown mountain troll. And she also says that Harry and Ron will get 5 points each, but Dumbledore will be informed of, like, everything that happened. Ron is kind of mad that they only came out of this whole situation with a net gain of 5 points, but he's like, it's pretty cool that Hermione got them out of trouble, even though they did save her. And Harry reminds him that she probably wouldn't have needed saving in the first place if they hadn't literally locked the troll in the restroom she was in. So they all go back to the common room, and everyone is eating the food there and whatnot. And that's been sent up since they couldn't really have their feast. And Hermione is standing alone by the door waiting for them. And they're all pretty embarrassed about everything. And they just quickly say thanks to each other and go get plates. And oh my gosh. This is just such a cute ending to this chapter. And the first sentence of the last paragraph of this chapter says, "But from that moment on, Hermione Granger became their friend." And then it goes on to talk about how Like, there are some things you can't go through without ending up liking each other and being friends or whatever, and knocking out a mountain troll is just one of them. And that is just so adorable. I really wanted a happy ending, and that is exactly what I got, so I'm so happy. And I hope that you guys enjoyed this episode of Up to No Good, covering chapters 9 and 10 of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. So, yeah, it's been a while, but, like, I really enjoy doing this, and I hope that you guys enjoy listening as much as I enjoy talking. So, this episode was directed by Lindsay Siplin, written by Lindsay Siplin, edited by Lindsay Siplin. Basically, every single thing is done by Lindsay Taylor Siplin. And I will see you guys soon. Bye!